In a world where the Toronto Maple Leafs don't have a captain, one man will lead them all. Mike Babcock is the untouchable one.
Hey, Coach Babcock, any thoughts about giving Austin Matthews some more ice time?
No. $50 million contract, 8 years. I'm Mike Babcock.
What about using Mitch Marner on the power play more often?
No. 8 years, $50 million contract. I'm Mike Babcock.
Mike Babcock doesn't take guff from anyone. Hey, give me your wallet.
No, I don't think so. I'm Mike Babcock.
You won't want to mess with the NHL's toughest hombre.
Sir, could you do me a favor and put out your cigarette while you're filling up your car with gas?
No. I'm Mike Babcock.
Whatever Mike Babcock wants, Mike Babcock gets.
License and registration, please.
Do you know how fast you were going?
How fast was I going?
180 kilometers in an 80 zone.
I think I can go faster. I'm Mike Babcock.
We got a runner!
He's not just the coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's also the captain, the general manager, the president, and quite possibly your worst nightmare. And he makes more money than Lou Lamoriello and Brendan Shanahan combined. Coming soon to HBO, Amazon, and Netflix, Mike Babcock, the Untouchable One.
Not to be confused with Ron Wilson, Randy Carlyle, Peter Horacek.
So, Kamal, let me ask you this question. If you were cornered in a dark alley and had to choose between facing Charles Bronson, Clint Eastwood, or Mike Babcock, who would you choose?
Wow. Well, based on that trailer, definitely not Mike Babcock.
No, he's badass.
He is definitely badass. And I couldn't believe how much Mike Babcock sounds like me. It's incredible. I didn't know we had the same voice. I might be mistaken for Mike Babcock. Yeah, it's happened many, many times.
There are worse things than being synonymous with someone who literally is untouchable, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. He's definitely untouchable. And I think that's the point that we were trying to get across, is with that contract in hand, he has plenty of grace available to him where he... I mean, there's a lot expected of them this year. A lot of, Bodog predictions and stuff like that. But if the Leafs don't make the playoffs even, there's nothing that they can do. Babcock... It's all Babcock's way or the highway.
It certainly is. And have you noticed during post-game interviews and scrums, it seems like he's highly irritable and he doesn't really answer questions broadly anymore. He kind of just looks at people who ask a question and responds with whatever pops in his head, and then he moves on because he's Mike Babcock.
Yep, that's Babcock for you. What are they going to do? He's here for six more years.
That's unbelievable.
Six more years. And he can have, I think he can have, two more years of nothing. And by that, I don't mean nothing. I think there will be definite progression. But I think, despite the high expectations that's coming out of Vegas, I think management knows that this will still be a growing year. And then maybe next year will be a next step. And then it's years 5, 6, 7, and 8, where I think the expectations will be really, really heavy upon Mike Babcock.
See, here's the thing, and I've been thinking about just that whole concept you brought up about what happens in waves year two, year three, year four. Can't we agree that in today's NHL, you don't know what's going to happen? You don't know the health status of certain players. I don't think there are any guarantees. I think this organization wants to win as quickly as possible, and anything less than like a second-round trip to the playoffs might be considered an abject failure.
That is potentially what they're thinking, because winning right away will help them with their cap situation. Because once they run out of those entry-level deals that they've got the luxury of with Matthews, Nylander, and Marner, that'll allow to surround those youngsters with players with higher contracts, i.e. Patrick Marleau. But once they're out of those years, then yeah, it might be tougher to win because they'll be paying those guys $8 to $12 million per year. So yeah, I mean, maybe management is looking at that as something that we want to win now, but I don't think this team's going to win right now. I don't.
Well, we're still talking about who's playing defense, so it's kind of ridiculous to even imagine contending for the Stanley Cup when you don't have anything remotely close to resembling a Stanley Cup contending defensive core.
And they did pick up Ron Hainsey.
They certainly did. And I'll tell you something. They could have used some more Ron Hainsey last night at that preseason game, let me tell you.
No, I know, and I mock, but it's hard to mock when he was part of the model of, you know, load up on at the front end with Crosby and Malkin and have a depleted blue line and still win the Cup. So maybe it's not that outlandish to have Hainsey to help be part of your top four defensemen on the road to a Stanley Cup.
Mm. And of course, we've now officially spoken about 4 minutes too long on the concept of Ron Hainsey than I'd like to. Yep. I mean, he was like a C choice, a D choice in what they needed to find in order to shore things up. But, I mean, this is where you look at who your young players are and you try not to buy too much into the rose-colored notion that you've got guys who are ready to make the jump. Although, I will tell you, watching Dermott, Grundstrom, and Liljegren, to me so far, has been a real source of comfort. I like what I see in these young defensemen.
Yes, I mean, last night's Ottawa team was an AHL Ottawa team.
It was. So, thanks for reminding me of that. I needed to be reminded. Thank you.
So just putting things into perspective again. Because I think you're going to come out with an article soon saying that they need to be heralded, right? Is that true?
Wait, are you implying that I'll write some kind of pro-literary perspective on the Maple Leafs? Hell yeah. Are you kidding?
Of course.
Of course I will. I'll tell you what I will write about that I think you'll find intriguing, as will most of our listeners. We polled about 3 or 4 days ago, if you recall. The poll question was, which of these matchups are you most looking forward to? And what was great about it was we gave some fantastic options. I mean, there was Price versus Anderson, Weber versus Matthews, and of course, Mike Babcock versus Julian. And yet, Kadri and Gallagher was on everyone's lips. There's something about those two catalysts that galvanize our teams.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. But the poll, the matchup that I voted for is actually the Matthews versus Weber matchup. Because I really like watching when a number one defenseman is going up against the number one star player of the opposing team. And let's face it, these guys are big time. We've got Shea Weber, Team Canada defenseman. Some are saying him the best defensive defenseman in the league versus Austin Matthews, a 40-goal scorer phenom. So it's going to be something to watch. And I think the Leafs, I don't know why I'm saying this, but I think they're going to break this streak of not beating the Montreal Canadiens. I think they will get in the win column against the Montreal Canadiens.
Well, it's about bloody time. So I was watching television, and I couldn't help but notice that your boy, Jonathan Drouin, just made a beautiful donation and is doing some really good things to get himself culturally appropriated with the faithful.
Yeah, it's a very big gesture on his part, really endearing himself to the Montreal fans. And it's funny, but doesn't Jonathan Drouin know that there's already a captain of the Montreal Canadiens?
Boy, that's a very prophetic, almost a prophetic question to see what will happen in a few months if he gets off to a great start and Patches keeps getting criticism that he's used to already.
Well, I think their success will go hand in hand. They're going to be playing on the same line. Like I said before, they were training partners over the offseason, so they're really hoping things will click. Mind you, I mean, game situation is going to be completely different, but they're going to get all the chances in the world to succeed as a partnership as a center and left winger with Drouin and Pacioretty. And then, of course, the question is who's going to be on right wing. Right now, they're going to start potentially the preseason with Alex Hemsky, of all people, on right wing. But that's, I think, just an experiment, seeing what Hemsky can do. And most people are leaning towards a Arturi Lehkonen as their right winger. So I don't know if Pacioretty, I think it's actually a blessing that Drouin is here, because a lot of the eyes are going to be on Jonathan Drouin versus Max Pacioretty. And the success that Pacioretty gets will probably be a result of Jonathan Drouin's success. So this is actually a blessing in disguise for Pacioretty, in that a lot of the eyes will be on Drouin, and this, any success that he has will be because of Drouin.
And that's interesting, because obviously you don't want your season to come down to hoping whether or not Alex Hemsky comes through in the clutch. We know what he is. What we don't know is how Johnny Drouin will perform in front of this big Quebec French market. It's got to be exciting to think that maybe a player like him will find a great deal of inspiration to perform. But I have this feeling if he gets off to a rough start, how do you see him doing under the pressure, knowing that he didn't handle it very well with the criticism in Tampa Bay? What if that starts happening in Montreal?
Well, it's really amazing right now what's going on with Jonathan Drouin. Obviously, he made the donation, so it's all, you know, it's sunshine, lollipops, flowers being thrown his way. And rightfully so, a donation to a hospital and a commitment to the hospital to raise that kind of money is a great gesture on his part. The sentiment is also saying that he is embracing the pressure that will be put upon him. And he himself has said, I'm looking forward to it. There also doesn't seem to be any kind of, you know, criticism that they're going to just try him at center. He's embracing the opportunity to try playing center. So, again, it's all positive sentiments that right now being thrown at Jonathan Drouin. So I think he will have, again, a grace period of not being criticized. Maybe there'll be a little bit of he's just learning the center position. But it will be very curious to see what happens when he hits, as everyone does in the NHL. No one scores in 82 straight games. If he ever goes, you know, 7-8 games without a goal, or 7-8 games with just 2 assists during a slump that the Habs might run into, it'll be really interesting to see how he handles that, because, let's face it, he faced the Tampa media, which maybe had, 3 guys in the room at one time. He's going to be facing the Quebec media with 20 guys in English and another 20 in French, so it's going to be a lot more different for Jonathan Drouin. He's saying all the right things at the moment, but I'm not sure what's going to happen if things start to go differently for Jonathan. So it'll be very interesting to see. The thing is, he has to be able to handle it. He's here for six years.
6 years of coming up against the Toronto Maple Leafs and having to handle Uncle Leo. I can't wait until Leo Komarov, who's looked really good in preseason, steps up against your promised one, because I think that's exactly the kind of matchup that will show us whether or not Jonathan Drouin is ready to play. I mean, he should skate circles around grinders and third liners and fourth liners. I'm really curious to see what he can do.
That's why Leo won't catch him.
Uncle Leo works in mysterious ways. Don't you worry about Uncle Leo.
I can't wait for Brett Lernout to take Uncle Leo's dirty, impossible little face and slaps him. Slaps him silly. Like, how dare you touch
Uncle Jonathan Leo Jr. has perfected telekinesis and teleportation. Do not be surprised that he appears on the ice when you least expect him with his cohorts, Dommy Moore and Matt Martin. I
agree with being surprised that you can't see him, because he always hits you from behind.
You know, as a longtime suffering Maple Leafs fan, I find it very difficult to find any kind of sympathy for Joffrey Leupel and his current plight with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Anyone who knows anything about how long-term injury reserve works and how NHL clubs try to bury really unsavory contracts to make sure that they don't affect their bottom line for future budgeting, and I am, of course, referring to other contracts such as Tim Gleason's, or Jared Cowan's, or Stefan Robida, or Phil Kessel, and even the most ridiculous 7.5 years that Darcy Tucker was being paid for Maple Leafs team that he'd no longer even suited up for. Understand that moving Leupel to long-term IR was the right play, as was finding reasons to not have him come back. Look, this is not about whether or not Joffrey Leupel is well enough to play the NHL game. This is about a player who was, unfortunately for better and for worse, associated with a regime that this current culture wants nothing to do with. And even though JVR, Kadri, and Bozak were fine examples of reclamation projects for Mike Babcock that have now turned into legitimate assets for their top six, Joffrey Leupel just doesn't fit into their plans. And as much as you might say to yourself, well, what about a player who at one point was a point-per-game producing juggernaut for this franchise and was even whispered around in certain corners as potential captain material, shouldn't he deserve a little bit of respect from this franchise? Sadly, and for whatever reasons that we as fans have to appreciate, this organization has considered him persona non grata. And unfortunately, so should you. Joffrey Leupel will spend his days snowboarding and enjoying this winter season, making $5.25 million, which is so much more than the average Canadian or American that it almost blows the mind. I don't think we should feel any lamentation or frustration for what he's going through, but relief to know that, unlike many other people in this world, Joffrey Leupel will have plenty of options for him moving forward.
So the Toronto Maple Leafs have one of the best management teams in the NHL. Yes, I can admit that. Brendan Shanahan seems to be doing a great job as president of the Toronto Maple Leafs, whatever his role is. Lou Lamoriello, a great GM, three-time Stanley Cup winner with the New Jersey Devils, putting in place Mike Babcock, one of the best coaches in the NHL, getting Mark Hunter, one of the best eyes for young talent coming out of the OHL. What does this management team get? They're getting rewarded with a better team. They've drafted properly. They've developed their young players properly. They've upgraded their goaltending situation properly. They've got rid of James Reimer and Jonathan Bernier and upgraded with Anderson. They've also manipulated the long-term injury reserve properly. These are all smart managerial decisions. And you know what happens when you have a good management team? Your team gets better. And you know what happens when your team gets better? Your team starts to win. And you know what happens when your team gets better and your team starts to win and your players individually get better? You have to pay them. So the Toronto Maple Leafs management team, although doing a good job, are actually going to be punished by the NHL because of the salary cap system. There are already whispers about what the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to do if William Nylander continues to trend upwards and starts to ask for David Pastrnak or Leon Draisaitl money. I have no problems with Nylander asking for that kind of money if he gets a 30-goal season. And by the way he's trending, that very well might happen. Now, the Leafs will probably have to give Nylander that money, but that means they're probably going to have to chip away at their depth that they've accumulated. So again, they're punishing the Toronto Maple Leafs management team for doing a good job by having them to break up their team. So it's the NHL salary system that I have a problem with, that they punish teams that make good managerial decisions by making them have to get rid of those players that they acquired by making good managerial decisions. So it just doesn't make sense. Now if you look, who is he actually going to be rewarded in the very near future by making bad managerial decisions? Just take a look at the West Coast and the Vancouver Canucks. General manager Jim Benning, with every questionable move that he makes, is actually going to be rewarded by the NHL because he is getting closer and closer to them getting first overall draft picks. So every move that he makes is a move to get a better lottery position, is a move to get a potential first overall pick. And the funny thing is, you know what happens when you get a first overall pick and you start to bank those first overall picks? Your team gets better. So Jim Benning, by being bad at general managing, is actually making the Vancouver Canucks good by getting them closer to high first round picks. As he gets them closer to the bottom, make the Leafs closer to the top, the Leafs will be punished while the Canucks will be rewarded. That's the NHL salary cap system.
What better way to take a closer, inquisitive, and impartial look at your Maple Leafs than with our friend of the show, Andrew Walker of Sportsnet 650, who's also the host of the program in Vancouver, but we won't hold that against him when it comes to Canucks fans. Andrew, thanks for coming on Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan.
No problem. Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan. You should throw a Canucks fan into the title. I know it's a little wordy, but you should do it.
Well, if you keep coming on the show, we'll create a cameo appearance. You'll be like, what's-his-face, Wilson on Home Improvement. You'll be that one guy peering over the fence reminding us that some franchises are in the process of rebuilding. And I want to start with that, really. Isn't it ironic that here we are talking about the Maple Leafs, who are at this high peak of anticipation and excitement? It must be a little bit ironic for you to realize how quickly things change in hockey, isn't it?
Yes and no. I think that things definitely changed very quickly for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I think that's not the norm, and I don't think it happens overnight. I think Leaf fans should never forget that that you didn't have to go through, like if Leaf fans say, well, we had a painful rebuild too. No, you didn't. A lot of things went well, and a lot of it was because of good hires. A ton of it was because of Mike Babcock. A ton of it was because the 1 year they decided to bottom out and they finished last by 1 point, and they won the lottery in a one specific year where Austin Matthews was the undeniable right guy. And again, Mike Babcock was a huge part of it. This whole there will be pain, 1 year. It literally took 1 year. Now, I know there was bad years for that, and it came with good draft picks and Mitch Marner and William Nylander, but the plan, the whole plan, was not to be bad in those years. It was a team that just wasn't ready to compete, and they finally said, you know what, screw this, Babcock in, We're really deciding to bottom out. And like it took 1 year for this team to be in a competitive playoff series. That's unheard of. There's some good fortune in there. But that's, to me, that's not the norm. And every organization that wants to rebuild, the Leafs model is the dream model because it took literally no time.
And don't you find it interesting, Andrew, that what often gets overlooked in this, again, arc of success, which is only trending in one direction these days, which is up, up and away, don't you find it also interesting that many fans tend to ignore the middle, if you will, veteran core that somehow found a way to peak at a time when most people thought they would be spare parts? I am, of course, referring to Nazem Kadri, JVR, James Van Riemsdyk, Tyler Bozak. Don't you find that intriguing that all three of those players have not only bought into the Babcock system, but look to be getting steadily better, improved as players over time?
Yeah, I think that's an overlooked notion as well. And again, part of the good fortune. And again, a big part of Mike Babcock. Nazem Kadri, I think we all knew he had it in him, but this was a frustrating guy. This was an enigmatic personality that couldn't harness whatever talent he had on the ice. And it was Mike Babcock that brought him out of it. And also, a looming contract dispute, like, you know, because we all know, I always thought this about Nazem Kadri. He always knew that to be the best, to be the best player he could on the ice, he was going to probably have to be more of a defensive player. But we all know what gets you paid: goals and assists. So how do you tell a young player, hey, focus more on the defense, the team will win more, when you haven't gotten paid yet? So the second that he got paid, and I know it came with some controversy, and he signed for whatever it was, $4 or $5 million a season, all of a sudden, he doesn't have to worry about how many goals he gets. He can play the game the right way. And it just so happened, as you know, good coaches will tell you, one leads to the other, and he ends up with a 30-goal season. I think Babcock deserves a ton of credit on that. And I think that this kind of shows that if you get all enraged as a fan and you want certain ways, you don't always know what you're talking about. Because all those guys, hey, we're rebuilding, Leaf fans said, all those guys, out, get what you can. Bozak, out. We hate that guy anyway. JVR, out. Nazem Kadri, out. And it just shows that people didn't necessarily know what they were talking about. Like, you remember that whole silly conversation of Tyler Bozak is everything that's wrong with the Leafs, and Mikhail Grabowski is better, and blah, blah, blah. Give me a break. It was dumb then, and it's dumb now. I don't know if Bozak and JVR are going to be here when the Leafs are, say, in a Stanley Cup final, hopefully in a couple of years. Nazem Kadri probably will be. But, yeah, those guys were invaluable last year, especially, I thought, for Bozak down the stretch. I thought Bozak was a huge story.
Those three were simply astonishing to witness. It was a renaissance in motivation and inspiration. They seemed to play with something that Mike Babcock was able to instill in them. And to see the vestiges of an old regime still find a way to not only be useful, but actually become part of this entire vehicle that Babcock is constructing. My question to you is, Andrew, what happened to Joffrey Lupul in the equation? I mean, when we take aside the injuries and again, being one of those players attributed to the old mentality, the old way, why is it that Joffrey Lupul hasn't found a way to endear himself with Mike Babcock and become an instrument or effective tool for what he's trying to achieve in Toronto?
I'm not sure exactly. And listen, I roll my eyes a little bit at Joffrey Lupul. I've always, I mean, and I watched him play for the Medicine Hat Tigers in junior hockey. I've never been convinced that Joffrey Lupul has the passion and desire for the game of hockey that others do. And that's fine. He was a very good player in the NHL. I don't know exactly the moment where the Maple Leafs decided that they didn't want him part of the new regime. But I do know that it was long before they deemed that he wasn't fit enough to play. And that's where, and listen, Joffrey Lupul was complicit in this, no doubt about it, but that's where the Toronto Maple Leafs, Lou Lamoriello, absolutely cheated and circumvented the cap. Mm-hmm. Now, it's good news if you're a Leaf fan. As someone who's a fan of the NHL, I don't think they should be able to get away with it. But listen, I talked about this on the air for a long time. I don't know why it's just becoming a story now. Joffrey Leupold was banged up, but he was nowhere near hurt enough where his career should be in jeopardy. They put it this way, there's two things that nobody talks about. They canceled the whole Loops Troops thing because they knew, I mean, they repurposed it, but they knew Joffrey Leupold wasn't going to be around. They stopped selling Joffrey Leupold merchandise in all the Leaf stores at the ACC. Joffrey Leupold wasn't done for any length of time, but try to find a Leupold jersey. They didn't exist. They were making plans to cut Joffrey Leupold out long before this shocking revelation that he was too injured to compete. They said, Joffrey, here's your money. You're too hurt. And they shook on it. Well, a year and a half later, Joffrey Leupold, away from the spotlight, is a little tired of nobody giving a crap who he is. And he had a bad moment on Instagram. And it's a stupid business decision by him. Because by him posting stuff like that, listen, like, people aren't going to necessarily be on your side in this. All you're going to do is cost yourself millions of dollars. And at the end of the day, I think Joffrey Leupold would rather have his money than his love for the game. And so there's nothing he can do about it. But yeah, listen, he was complicit in this, and the Leafs absolutely messed with the system by lying. I don't know if there's consequences, but that's what happened, and you're not paying attention if you don't admit it.
It's certainly playing out to be a Joe versus the volcano scenario. And as we know, hell hath no fury like MLSC scorned. So certainly we'll see if Leupold can still salvage an NHL career out of this, knowing full well that there's a lot of controversy that really was unnecessary at this stage in training camp. Speaking of which, the one Achilles heel of this team that does get talked about by purists and fair weather alike is essentially the Maple Leafs defense. And I'm wondering, when you look at some of the young crop of promising talent that they have on the horizon, whether it's Grundstrom or Liljegren or Dermott, whom do you see making this team? And will the Maple Leafs be able to upgrade those defensive warts that they struggled with last year in time to make this into a triple-digit caliber season?
Yeah, I think the defense really surprised last year in the fact they were able to make it through the whole season and get into game six of the first round with that crew. And I think, again, a lot of it was coaching. I think Jake Gardner took a step. I'm a big fan of Morgan Riley. I think Zaitsev was better than they anticipated, even though he kind of ran out of gas towards the end and went through a bit of an injury. I still don't think it's great. And I still think this Leafs group did overachieve a bit last year. The one thing that's crazy right now, and I notice it especially more that I'm on the other side of the country, the Leafs hype train is out of control right now, Ari. And I know it's exciting, and everybody has good feelings and optimism in the preseason. Mm-hmm. But right now, people are talking about the Leafs like, you know, they're gifting a playoff spot. They're gifting a round win. And then it's, let's see what happens in the second round. It's not that easy. And I'm a big fan of what they're doing and a big fan of a lot of their players. But a lot went right, much like a lot went wrong for the Toronto Blue Jays this year. You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs got great goaltending. They stayed healthy. Auston Matthews scored 40. That's amazing. And it, listen, Auston Matthews is a great player. It doesn't mean he's going to score 50 in year two. That's not how hockey works. It's not necessarily linear. The defense, overachieved is maybe a little harsh, but they stayed healthy and they found a way to get through it. I think Travis Dermott has a really good chance to make this team, to answer your question. I love the Liljegren pick. I love it. He's not ready yet, but that's a fantastic pick by this organization, a guy that should have been a top 10 conservatively pick. But I think Travis Dermott has a real good chance to make this team. I think he's the best defenseman in the ranks below the NHL in the organization. But but from a broad picture, it wouldn't stun me if the Leafs missed the playoffs this year. And that doesn't mean it's a gigantic step back. It just means that last year a lot of things went according to plan.
No question about it. And it is fascinating, isn't it, how getting mono is very much like the scarlet letter of the NHL when it comes to being analyzed by scouts and so on and so forth. No question. Andrew, tell listeners to Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan what you've been up to, your affiliation related to the Canucks, and how they can find you on social media.
Hockey out in the West is very interesting. I know Leaf fans are loud and passionate, and there's nothing quite like a Toronto Maple Leaf fan. But I will admit, the West, because we don't have the Blue Jays and the Raptors exposed every day, the West loves hockey. And not just their team, but they'll listen to an interview about the Columbus Blue Jackets or junior hockey, all of that. The West likes hockey more than Toronto does, and it's very true. And so that's exciting to be out here. The Canucks are in, and this is why I talk about the Leafs rebuild as compared to the Oilers quote unquote rebuild, and the Canucks are going to lie somewhere in the middle. You need to get lucky, for things to go your way. But the Canucks are the one Canadian team that probably does not have legitimate playoff aspirations. So we're the new home of the Vancouver Canucks. We're a new station. We'll have all 82 games. I'll be doing the pregame show at least for the 7 o'clock home starts here. You can still catch me on TV during the late broadcast for intermission panels, things like that. But it's exciting to come in to watch a new team and basically evaluate from day one. People here get a little grumpy. They get a little bandwagon-y when your team hasn't had success. So you have a preconceived notion on certain players. And listen, not that I didn't watch Canucks hockey in other years. I'm very well versed on the team. But I don't mind coming into a new show and saying, listen, all these players, they start fresh with me. I'm going to watch the games. I'm going to evaluate training camp in the preseason, and then I'm going to tell you what I think. I don't care that you have a love-hate relationship with Sven Berchi. If I like Sven Berchi, I'll tell you, and if I don't, then I'll carve him. So it's a bit of a fresh start with the new team with no preconceived notions. I like that.
Rebuilding, retooling, and reimagining the future of this upcoming NHL season with the great Andrew Walker, host of the program on Sportsnet 650. And, of course, you can find him on Twitter at AndrewWalker650. Andrew, always a pleasure. Hope to have you on Habs Fan versus Leafs Fan again very soon.
No problem. It could be a real interesting season in Toronto, so enjoy it.